No, this is she was at the at that university there, and her.
No, I didn't know that. Betty Harrop.
Yes, her father was a postmaster.
No, I didn't know that. I'm under contract to the university on this. I paint and I write and I do special jobs for the university. I produced a series of radio shows based on interviews a few years ago on the development of Fairbanks. And then I... tell me, you are... your name is Mrs. Smith, Smith no. But it's a lovely first name, but it escapes my tongue.
It's Adele.
Adele, yes.
Yes.
And, but your maiden name...
was DeVille, Aristarque DeVille. We had the old name. He was French, my father. And a word of French Pete. That was my father.
Well, I'm glad you told me. Yes, I had heard that French Pete was your father, but I didn't. That's all I had ever heard, and I didn't know what his real last name was.
Well, it was Pierre, his name, but they called him Pete. And
Deville.
D-E-V-I-L-L-E.
Yes. See, my given name is Neville.
Neville. Deville. Well, this was French, and Aristarque too. And 3 years ago, my sister and I went to England and to France, too. And we said, let's look up his people. Well, we didn't have time. We didn't do it. But I did ask some French people over there, and they said, no, Deville was quite a common name, but Aristarque wasn't. But there was some, but that was an uncommon name there.
Well, that is interesting.
So, We didn't really get to talk to them enough, you know.
But now your father, he was, everybody in Alaska had a nickname.
Yes, they did.
Just that was.
Yeah, they all had nicknames. Everyone I can remember when I was small had nicknames.
But now, were you born here in Alaska?
No, I was 2 years old when we came up. My father had gone back to England and married my mother, and they lived for 4 years in California. Or she did, and then he had come back up here on and off.
What was the story? Now, your father first came to Alaska in the 1870s or something.
1870s, yes. I have it down on paper someplace, but I didn't get it out to look up.
Mm-hmm. But
he came up, well, he had a schooner of his own, you know, my father.
I don't know a thing about it.
Yeah, and he brought Jack London up with him one time.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
How interesting.
It was interesting, you know.
Yes.
To hear all those, what they used to talk about. But he went back and forth, and he went back to France, and then into London, down to London, where he met my mother.
So your mother was English?
Yes, she was from England, and he was from France.
And he brought a schooner up here.
Yeah.
I was trying to put the pieces together. Do you know why he sallied forth into the great world?
Well, he was sort of just an adventurer, you know. He wasn't really looking for fortunes, I don't think, but, you know, a lot of men did that, young men, at that time.
As Service said, what was it? It's not the finding the gold, but the looking for it.
Yes, well, he liked, he explored and liked to, he liked Alaska, you know, so he would come back. He left and came back several times.
And they lived in, where did they live in California?
Well, I was born in San Francisco, and my two sisters in Santa Cruz.
I see.
Then, well, I think he and Jack London had something in Oakland. Mm-hmm. They had they were in some sort of a business there. There's Jack London Square there, I suppose you've heard of
yes.
it.
Yes, I'm a San mm-hmm. Franciscan by birth. My grandfather was a Santa Clara County pioneer. He, you know, written up in the old
yes.
history book there. So I was just trying to plug in any information I had on that period, but I don't know too much about California, Jack London's California days, really, except that he did have some business there in Oakland, and it would have been your father with
oh, that was with him. Well, yeah. I do have some little papers away someplace about them, you know.
Mm-hmm. This was not written together. Up really in too much detail, though, was it? I haven't run across
no.
in my readings. I haven't run across them.
Well, it was in the San Francisco Examiner.
I see.
And when I was there about 10 years ago, I went down, my sister and I, to see if they had anything, but they said they destroyed, well, a lot of those papers were lost in the earthquake, most of them, I guess, everything
yes,
like
the
that.
The fire of 1907 or whatever.
Yeah. because it was before that. I was born in 1901, so it was before that, you see, when they were at it. And they didn't have anything.
Where did you grow up in San Francisco? Or you grew up here? You came
yes,
up
I came up when I was two.
See, my mother's a San Franciscan, born in 1903. Had you grown up in that area, you would have been acquainted.
Yes. Well, I was born in November 1901, so.
I see.
And then they came up in 1904, I think. My mother did. He brought her up then.
I see. Now, he came in, he discovered what became the Treadwell Mine. Was it the Juneau trip?
Yes, it was in Juneau. Well, that's a big, long story, and all kind of stories have been told on it, you know.
Yes, now you remarked that a lot of misinformation has gone out about that.
And I don't like to say anything about it. I have two brothers in Cordova, and my oldest brother, he was three when our father died. Jack wasn't born yet. He was born 6 months after. But, well, Pierre gets so old, he doesn't like anything said that isn't so, and I wouldn't say it either, you know. He's got a remarkable memory, though. He can remember real good. He sent several people here, and I said, no, I'm not telling you anything. Well, there's this Johnny Weiss that's writing a book, and he wanted to know a lot of things. I said, I don't remember too much. About 1900, I wasn't born yet. It was from then on, he said. But my father had the mine, and he went back to France to raise the capital. I know this is true. This, you know, he could get it there. He didn't have the money. And there was he had a gentleman agreement with John Treadwell. And they got it away from him. He wasn't a citizen yet, my father. And I know all of that was true. That part, when he come back, they already had the mine and he didn't get it. You know, there's quite a bit about it in the down there in the museum in Juneau.
Yes, yes.
Have you ever looked at it?
I haven't. I've been in the museum, but I don't recall reading.
Well, you'd have to ask for it.
I would have to ask for the
material. Man, who was it? Kaitan, was that his name?
Edward Kaitan.
Yeah, well, he died. He showed it to me. He, well, I told him who I was, and was there anything I wanted to see? I have a son living in Juneau, too, Joe. He's lived there for 23 years.
And your son Bill is in Gillingham.
Yes.
Whom I knew.
Yeah.
I now that I've met you, I see the resemblance. I know it was your son.
Oh, yes, I guess he looked like me and my mother, you know.
Is that right?
Yeah, he does look like us.
Handsome man.
And then I have two daughters here in Anchorage.
So you've had four?
Five children.
Five. Well, go on and tell me about, you came to Alaska then in 1905, about?
No, it was 1903 or 4 now. I was
as an infant.
Yes.
To Cordova, was it?
No, to Catella.
To Catella?
Yeah, that's where my father had a store, a general store, had started it, and then he went back and got my mother.
This is near Yakutat?
No, it's the first stop across the Gulf, when you used to come over the Gulf in the boats.
Yes.
And it's, well, it isn't too far from Cordova, but you have to go by plane now. Over the Copper River in the boats they used to go.
It was on the other side of the Copper River. The
yes.
East, to the east side.
Yes.
And that was originally an Aleut or Indian village in there?
Oh, there was Indian village when I first went there, yeah. When my mother first went there, yes, with us. But they were looking for, there was coal mines. They were looking for coal, Guggenheims. And then they started the railroad there, you see, and moved it to Cordova. That's where they're they found out that Cordova had the best harbor. There's no harbor in Catella. My father went and spent all the money he did have, which he had considerable right then. He put in breakwaters and spent everything there. And then, of course, they moved this town to Cordova and left him without anything, and my mother with all of us. There was six children. And Jack was the seventh, but he wasn't born until 6 months later, after my father died. I always do think, though, if you're up, because he was 54, I think, at that time.
Yes.
And, oh, I guess he just didn't think he could start again, maybe. I always think that's what really killed him, you know. The worry over him.
Oh, yes, the strain.
Yes.
What was the cause of his death?
They said asthma.
Yes.
Yeah, he choked. And for what I see of emphysema, they never said that word those days. Mm-hmm. It seemed like it was that, because I can remember I was 9 and how he would sit and choke and cough, but I guess they do with asthma too.
Yes.
He was a big man.
Was he?
6'6", like my youngest boy is too, a big Frenchman, but
a big
still
Frenchman.
A big Frenchman, yes. Mm-hmm.
I was trying to think of you were there 5, 6, 7 years, really there in Catala.
Yes. Oh, yes. Well, my mother didn't move away. She couldn't after he died. He died in 1911.
I see.
And then in 15, I guess, or 16, 1916, we moved to Cordova.
I see.
I had gone over there in 1914, though, to go to school. 1915, I guess, to go to high school. There was no high school in Cordova.
In
Catala, rather.
How many people were left in Catala after the Guggenheims moved the
railroad?
The railroad over.
Well, they gradually left, you know. I don't know how many was left at the time, but they always thought, some of them hung on for a long time, thought something else would
develop
the oil field and the oil wells in, because there was coal and oil, and it's all still there, you know, that they haven't touched it. Just closed up everything.
Yes, I've never been on the ground in that area to ramble around. And I've been in Cordova, but not the Catala area. I've just flown by, I've seen pictures. But the coal seams, as I recall, I've seen some pictures, I think there are exposed coal seams.
Yes, there are. And that was high-grade coal, it called high-grade. It was shiny and black, you know. The big battleships used to come in there, like the Maryland come there, and they were the small boats, they were the large battleships, testing that coal years ago.
And they've never developed that?
No, they haven't. And they would lay out, you know, there's no harbor, they would be out, you could see them, but they...
The ships would lay offshore?
Yes, quite a ways out, you had to go in small boats to them.
I see. Would they come into Catala to get the coal?
Yes, they would.
Catala, you call it. Catala,
K-A-T-A-L-L-A, mm-hmm. It is. And, I guess, yeah, they had to come in to get it.
I mean, it was not offshore. It was not tideland coal. It wasn't
something they brought up
from the mudflats like they do in
Anchor Point. Like you said, it was in layers. You could see it now, but mile 7,
well,
you could see that coal in layers, you know, shiny.
Did your dad have a mining operation there at all for the coal?
Not in Catala. He didn't. Or not oil either. There was also, they were looking for oil. Hmm. Standard Oil had, after that, they did work there for a while, you know, and had oil wells.
Oh, they did. They drilled there.
Yes, and then they capped them, I think, in about 1921 or something.
Mm-hmm.
Up till then, they produced.
Those were producing? That was
yes, they are, and they're still there, and I imagine there's just as much oil there as North Slope. I believe there's more. I don't believe much in North Slope until it gets going. Too many places have closed up and all since I've been in Alaska, you know.
Strange things.
It's too bad, too.
Yes.
Like Cordova, too, was a copper mining. My husband worked on the railroad there, and that was really a good little town, too, you know.
They say that copper just ran out up there.
Well, they said it at that time. That was before we went into the Second World War. But if they'd have hung on, I heard after that there's all kind of copper up there. It didn't run out.
You just wonder what pulls the strings behind these big industries if they do close down some operations and move out.
They move right out, yeah.
Well, you came into Catala and Catala. Your dad had a store there?
Yes, he did.
How did he build it? Was it a log?
No, it was a big wooden structure.
He brought the wood in.
Lumber. Mm-hmm. Well, he also had a sawmill. Yes, I'd forgotten that.
Oh.
A sawmill and sawed his own logs, boards, and for everything else, too. It was a big property, you know, at that time. A big mill, the only mill there.
I see. And did he export that wood, I wonder, the lumber?
Well, they used it. There was no Cordova yet. They used it all over Catala. You know, everything that was built out of that lumber. They didn't bring any in.
Did Did they fish out of Cotella?
No. Well, they did out of quite a ways out, but not right in Cotella. Because the water was, it's rough.
I see. It's open to the sea.
Yes, it is.
No harbor. So there really wasn't a place for the little fishing boats to tie.
No, but at Yakutat, they could fish. No, was it Yakutat? Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. No.
They do have a port.
Let's see. I'm not talking about Yakutat. That's the other side of the Gulf. Well, I believe it was called that. Now I'm confused.
Well, Yakutat, I think, is when you leave Juneau.
Yes.
You fly today. You go to Yakutat and then to Cordova.
But that isn't what I mean, that Yakutat.
And there's Cape Yakutaga.
Yeah, that's out of Cordova.
The
Yakutat. But this was Chilcat. I mean, it's Chilcat, not Yakutat. And that's out of Cordova, so many miles. I don't know how many miles. But they had a saltery there, and we're going to have a cannery. But they never had the cannery. I don't believe it.
I didn't know about that.
Yeah, that was at Chilcat.
The only Chilcat I ever heard of was up above Skagway.
Chilcoot, isn't it?
Chilcoot. I see
that. Yeah.
I see, so there are two different places.
Yes. That was the Indian village at Chilcat, and there was a lot of Indians there.
I see.
I don't know how many miles it was. You had to go to a little gasoline launch, you know. Mm-hmm. Or I guess men could walk to it. It was quite a ways, but they did walk.
Oh, my. What were the Indian people like there?
They were good-looking people, big people, quite big people. They were, tribe is that? Tlingits. The Tlingit.
Yes. Indians. Yes, I know a Tlingit girl from the, she lives at Sitka now. She's a vice president of Sheldon Jackson College.
Yeah.
Sitka. Her name is Eileen Ramos, which is a married name.
Yes.
But her parents were Tlingit from the Yakutat Sitka area. Yeah, her father had moved to Sitka from Yakutat. But her mother came from the mouth of the Copper River at Cordova.
Yes.
And her parents laid claim to that whole land from the mouth of the Copper River. Her mother was Iyak.
Oh, yes.
So those would have been her people.
Yeah, they would. There was the Iyak tribe and Copper River tribe, and they called them different tribes, mm-hmm. You know.
Did they have the big houses, the big long houses? Did they have the totem poles and this sort of...
No, they didn't.
They didn't have those.
No. And they mostly, they were more or less nomads when I was little. They'd move around. They'd come in and live in little places, and then they'd move back to Chilcat, you know. They didn't really live around Cotella.
I see. They came in there and camped for the summer, maybe?
Yes, during the fishing and berry time, because they got berry loads, skiff loads or canoe loads of berries, and all the other things that they would put up. That's a long time ago. 70 years ago, you know,
yes.
So they dried, and like the wild celery, they'd get whole loads of that and dry it, and then paddle away.
Fill the canoe with it.
Yeah, fill the canoes with it.
That must have been quite a sight. Really.
It was interesting.
Because they had big canoes with those big carved.
Yes, they did have.
I mean, I can just, really, I can visualize it.
And I can remember how they brought in their Indian made things, their baskets. They made beautiful baskets.
Mm-hmm.
I have one back there from Cotella. And the people, even then, you know, the Indians would spread them all out over the beach because there was a big beach there, and they'd go down and trade them in for strings of beads and things like that. They didn't give them anything for them, but they were simple people, of course. You know, they didn't know educated at all.
They weren't knowledgeable in our customs.
No, they weren't. Maybe they were always like people, they lie and they steal and they drink. But those people didn't.
They didn't.
They didn't have the opportunity yet to learn all that stuff, I guess.
Well, what my friend Elaine has told me, I really have a respect for the people who practiced the early ways. They were a very fierce, strong people.
Yes, they were.
But I don't believe they were given to the debauchery that we associate with the Indian people today who have become involved with the liquor and the social problems of our
no,
culture.
No, they weren't like that. They hadn't. And they, well, you see, we had to go to school, there was little school there, but they couldn't go to the white school, which was wrong. And I never went to school with natives.
Uh-huh.
And all those years in Alaska, sounds funny, you know.
No, there was a school in Catella.
There were schools, yeah, up to the eighth grade. And but they were sent out to Chamorro, to the Indian school,
yes,
the Indians.
Yeah, that's a real tragedy.
That was. Well, sometimes there was a few of them that might be quarter breeds or something that went to school, but not the real Indian children, which should have gone just with the rest of us, you know, really.
Yeah, there was a real segregation up along the
Oh, it wasn't
coast,
good.
And
Bill Egan stopped that.
Did he?
He said there wouldn't be any more of that after he got to be governor.
Is that right?
Yes, he did. I'll at least give him credit for that, you know. He didn't think that was right, and he was born and raised in Valdez.
Yes.
So, I suppose it was the same there, too.
Yes.
Well, he's 60 years old. He's younger than I am. Maybe he went to school with some of them. I don't think many of them, though.
No.
They had to go out, go away, if they went to school.
Well, I've interviewed a few people who are today educated professional people, but of
yes.
Indian background. And they all describe this period of the struggle for their education to go to Chamorro. And
yes.
you know, I don't think anybody appreciated the heart-rending problems, the suffering they had leaving home.
I can remember those little girls especially that couldn't talk a word of English. They'd send them in from Yakutagin, different places, and said, my mother would take them in. She was a nurse and a very good woman. I don't think there's ever been a better woman in Alaska. I know there hasn't. That did more for people. And she would take care of them. They couldn't until they got put on the boat with their big tag on their name. And they were terrified, those little girls and boys too, but I can remember the girls especially.
To go out to the schools.
Yes, to go to away. They were going to be sent away, and it must have been a terrible thing on those children.
Yeah.
They couldn't speak English, you know. She always tried to give them something too, some little keepsake, I remember, you know.
How nice. How lovely your mother must have been.
She really was. She was a wonderful woman, my mother was. She didn't do anything to get paid for it, although she had to nurse and do that. After my father died, you know. She was from England and didn't know the ways of the United States either. She only
been
there a few years.
There are differences.
But she loved Alaska too, I would say she did.
How many people were there in Catella about that time?
Well, I guess there must have been 25 or 35,000 when they were really busy. There was three banks there. And two paper and the evening. Catella Herald and the Evening Star, I think it was called. There was a two. Governor Strong was there. He was one of the governors, you know. And he had the Herald, the Catella Herald.
My, you know, I thought I knew something about Alaska, but I am embarrassed. I had no
People
idea.
Don't even know. They've never heard of Catella. And that's the funny part.
No, I had heard of it.
Yes.
But that was all. That's all. I knew that there was an oil development there. And that there had been actual working wells.
Yes.
There was a working field there. That's all I ever knew about it. And that there had been a community of some sort.
There were some awfully nice people there, too. Really. You know, Barrett Willoughby, she wrote
yes.
books. Well, she lived there, and her mother had a little store. Yeah.
You two would have been a similar age, were you?
No, she
was a little older.
She was older. Uh-huh. She was already grown up when we
was.
Went there. Young woman she
I
was.
See.
Yes.
I see. Her.
She was almost as old as my mother.
Oh, I see. I see. Her files have recently gone to the University of Alaska.
Oh, have Fairbanks. They?
Mm-hmm. Her complete collection of her documents and correspondence and, you know.
I'm glad they have.
And, oh, yes. I haven't had a chance to work in them, but I understand. I've talked to some people that have been looking them over. They're fascinating papers.
Yeah.
So there may be something I could tell them
there. Oh, I think so.
Should be.
There was. Well, I think in that Rocking Moon, that first book she wrote,
mm-hmm.
She mentions when they went up, and her father had a schooner, too. And he took them all up there.
Now, why did these men have these?
Oh, they liked to get around. He was like, her father was a professional gambler. And, you know, the last thing she wrote that I read was in The Good Housekeeping, and she wrote how Papa came COD, she called it. Would be in her documents, and I'd really read that if I was you.
I'll look it up.
And he'd have to be bailed out when he got there. But he would go around, follow the different places and gamble, and her mother had to earn the living. Old Martin Barrett, his name was.
I see.
She always fascinated me because she dyed her hair and used so much makeup. And nobody did that I knew of when I was little, you know.
Barrett herself, you mean?
Yeah. Barrett Willoughby, she called herself. Flossie, we called her. Her name was Florence. And Flossie to us.
And Flossie she was with her dyed hair and lots of makeup.
Yes.
Yes.
She was cute, though. Kind of a cute little person. Big blue eyes, I can remember. I thought she was, you know.
Oh, my, that's interesting. No, I don't know that I've met very many people that knew her, one or two people. But they didn't really describe her. I hadn't had a picture of her.
Well, I don't have a picture of her. I should have him.
I don't have a physical picture, but I mean, it's a,
yes. Well, she was married then, down there, and divorced. I think she was married several times after that. She married twice in Catella.
Well, you know about artists, what they say, artists and writers.
Yes.
I say that's why I say I have to always paint or do something like that to excuse my temperamentalness.
Well, I can see it.
Right.
You know, she tried painting at first.
Did she?
Before she started writing, and she used to get those great big shells, big clam shells, you know.
Yes.
And paint in them like they do now, but she never tried to do anything with them, except her painting. It wasn't very good, I guess they said it wasn't.
Uh-huh.
And I used to sit and, she used to sit on the beach and try to paint, and I'd watch her lots of time. But then she started this writing, and
she did well with that.
She had a ghost writer, they said, didn't they?
Those days.
Yeah, that was all. Well, if she did, anyway, she supplied all the information. It was her life. A lot of them was in her.
Yes.
About what she had done and her brothers. She had two brothers.
Well, she fictionalized it, and they were
yes,
well
she
done.
Did. I liked her books, you know.
Well, that's interesting. I didn't know that she was there to tell them. And I suppose your dad spoke English with a bit of a French accent.
Oh, he did have a real accent, yes.
And
my mother, too, her English accent, so.
You're American. Your English, of course, is quite American. You didn't ring through any
we were the first
inflection.
No. We tried to get her to speak like we were learning in school. And the teacher, I remember the first grade teacher that I had, she said, well, you don't want to do that. Your mother's using perfect English to us. But well, she had a soft voice, too, and it was real English, of course. She never lost her accent.
What happened to your mother?
Oh, she died 12 years ago.
12 years ago. Here in Anchorage?
No, in Cordova.
In Cordova. She remained there.
Yes.
So she had seven children, and was born after your father died.
Yeah, Jack.
And what happened? The Guggenheim interests moved the railroad. Didn't they start to build a railroad there in Cordova?
Yes, they did. They had it built. Out to, I don't know how far, for quite a few miles, but not all the way to Cordova, you know. And then they decided just to abandon everything. There was a lot of money lost in Catella that way. Everything put up and built and all these big hotels and different things. A real busy place. And then they just moved everything, you see. People moved over to Cordova.
That's a strange,
that could, strange and
thing how that city was abandoned today.
It was terrible, really, for people that lost everything, like my father did, and my mother left there, and lots of other people, too. And I was small, but I can remember a beautiful hotel that was just the Filbert, I think they called it. It was just glittering, the whole great big room with mirrors and all the crystal glass and things that you don't see anything quite so elaborate these days, you know. Then the big bar they had in there, mahogany, and they moved that to Cordova, Bob Corn. About that, and it's in the Alaska House down there.
Oh, in Cordova?
Yes.
Hmm.
That's, well, I can remember seeing it. I didn't, of course, patronize things much when I was nine, but.
Not having been there, I'm trying to get a picture. Is it kind of flat? You know, Cordova is built over a hillside.
Yes, it's quite hilly.
But I was thinking over in the back of Cordova, when you get out onto the river plain, then it's flat. How is it there at Catella? Is it kind of on a hillside like Cordova? Or
no,
is it on a flat,
it's not on. It's flat.
It's flat there.
But not too far back. There's hills.
Mm-hmm. Now, I recall vaguely the story of the building of the Copper River Railroad. The big problem of putting the river, crossing the river, and the glacier and that sort of thing. Did they have any of that problem there at Catella? Was that?
Yes, they did have. It was. They said it would have been too. You know, they couldn't build very well those days, like they can now. In Cordova, they built that Copper River Bridge there, the $1 million bridge it was called. And they're just out to that now with a new highway.
Yes. But that's not, that maybe that is what stopped the development of the railroad then.
Well, I can't remember. There was another company went in there called Bruner's, and there was some sort of a war over it.
Oh.
And their roads were both there, the two roads.
I want to check something. Yeah.
I talked to a man who had been up at McCarthy, the Kennecott mine, and he told me a story that he said there is a whole mountain of copper up there. He says, I've seen it. I know it's there.
Yes.
But it was not owned by the Guggenheims. It was owned by another very big New York outfit. But they had to ship their ore out on the Guggenheim transit system.
Yes.
So by the time they got there, and it had to go to Guggenheim Smelters, and by the time he got his check for the ore, he had a penny's profit because he sent out tons of ore. But they charged him such exorbitant freight and smelting fees that it didn't pay him to operate the mine, and they defeated him.
Yes, I've heard that too.
And but now that wasn't the other company that was building the other railroad.
They called it Bruner's.
Bruner's.
And I really don't know why, what the trouble was between them. Whoever got there first, I guess, was going to have the right of way. You know, they did things like that.
Yes.
And I think there was people killed, too, there at that time, because they said there was a regular war over it and a fighting. There's strange things that have happened up in Alaska that you don't hear about anymore.
No.
But,
no, you know, we read these Rex Beach, Jack London books, yes, and we think, oh, how far out, you know.
But that's not really far out, either. They really did things like that. And like down in Cordova, they had that, just like the Boston Tea Party, it was that coal party. They threw coal over. I think it was coal from there, from Catella.
I don't know about that.
Well, I have a little book someplace that this 100 events that made Alaska or something.
Yes, yes.
It tells about it in there.
I see.
If you could get that. You know.
Well, now you didn't see it. You weren't. That was before your time.
Well, no, I wasn't in Cordova then.
Well, that was in Cordova.
Yes.
Oh, I see.
Well, I was in Catella at that time because, you see, my father went there when it first started up in Catella. He went to look. He came back from California. He'd lost everything, and he was going to look around there again in Alaska. So my mother was still there, and then said for her when he got the place. And we still own the property over there in Catella, but there's nothing there, you know. The buildings fell down. And
what a sad thing. How long has it been since you were there?
When you left it's there been 50 years. Well, I left there before that, but I went back about 50 years ago just to look at it. I was there for a while, a couple of weeks.
And
there were still people living there then.
There were.
Yes. There was still a little post office. One of my sisters lived there. She was married to somebody who was up at the oil well, and they was producing oil then. Or maybe 52 years ago it was, yes, when I was there.
So they did continue to produce oil into the 20s then?
Yes, so. They did. I don't remember exactly when they closed. That was the 20s sometime.
Hmm. Did your dad ever speak of the Treadwell mine? Did he ever mention anything about how he had made the discovery?
Yes, he did. He said he was cheated out of it. And I can remember the words he used on old John Treadwell. Wasn't very flattering, but it wasn't, I guess it was the truth.
Sure.
You know.
He was no doubt very bitter about that.
Yes, he was. Because my father wasn't dishonest.
Mm-hmm.
He was a real honest man, you know, and he didn't like that done to him and leave him without anything.
Of course. Well, yeah, that was a tragic thing.
But I guess a lot of those things happened too.
Yes, they did. I'm sure they did. And much worse. They're in the sense,
yes,
that there were men dumped down the frozen river that never came back to tell the tale.
Yes, things like that went on.
But did he mention how he made the discovery at all?
I don't remember if he did.
You don't recall his saying anything about his. Any you don't have any memories of his talking about his arrival, in early arrival in Alaska before you had to.
Oh, I can remember, but before he ever went to Juneau, he was up, I don't know where it would have been, Unalakleet or something. Billy thinks, my oldest son thinks, maybe it was up there, because he used to talk about some blonde Eskimos that were in the country.
Is that right?
Yeah, he said, Bill said they were up that way. So he must have been there.
Somewhere on the Bering Sea coast.
Yes, that's where he went into there. He was a real young man when he came up, you know,
yes,
at first.
Sure.
But he always did say, and I remember them calling him a crazy Frenchman in Catalina, because he said he always was working on little model airplanes, and nobody else did those days, a wooden thing, all made out of wood. And he said they'd be flying planes every day. He said everything would come by plane, would all be by planes. And they used to stand there and say he was a crazy Frenchman, talk like that.
Oh, he was a man of vision.
Yes, he really was. When I think now, I wish I had that little plane model. You know, it was about that big on a board, and he was always working on it.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
It was interesting, because it's like he said it would be, but you'd think people would have...
No, it's amazing how so many people lack any kind of vision.
I guess so.
Even today, you can say, you know, 20 years ago, this was Moose Pasture. We're all out there at Vine Northern Lights.
It was, sure.
And you can say, now look, if this was Moose Pasture 20 years ago, what's going to happen 20 years from now? We could have a landing pad to Venus or something.
Certainly. There will be things. Are you cold?
No,
I have
fine.
Windows open, I guess.
No, I'm comfortable. I was just thinking, the change goes so rapidly. And yet, if even today, with the knowing how accelerated changes have been in the past 20 years, if you say we could have a landing pad for a space thing to Venus, they'd laugh at you today.
Oh, they would. They wouldn't. No one could see it. It'd be hard to visualize it, but they're doing things so fast, too.
Yes. Well, gee, I hope I'm not taking your time.
No, I don't have much to do.
I love to learn from you. But you went on to Cordova then. Your mother moved to Cordova.
Yes.
And your one sister remained, you said, in Catalina?
Yes, she got married over there. And our oldest sister, the oldest one in the family.
I see.
And she was real young, but she remained there.
And what happened to she continued to live there the rest of her life?
No, she didn't. She came to Cordova too after. She died when she was only 50.
I see. There you go.
Died of a cerebral hemorrhage, so died fast.
Yes.
But she has a daughter living here. Betty Bennick. She's the one that's married into the Bachners, or was. And Betty Bennick is one of the, I don't know them too. I know Betty Bennick and my Betty, but the other Bachners, I don't really know too. One of the men. Mm-hmm. You know, that is all.
Yeah, I just...
I don't know if they're real old-timers even. Are they?
Well, Cleora's parents came up. Now, everything is relative, but Cleora came up... yes, she came to Fairbanks in 1906 or something.
Yes.
As an infant. And then her mother remarried. Her father took off. And her mother remarried. And then this stepfather... And the mother and Cleora made the trek to Livengood. And then she went back to Fairbanks, and then eventually she wound up down here. And now she's remarried a man by the name of Erickson, because Mr. Bachner died. And Cleora had to move her back up to Fairbanks because she has a son there. And she's in a pioneer home, and Mr. Erickson is confined to a wheelchair, and so she felt it would be easier for her there.
Yes, it. Well,
but George Bachner, she had several sons, two or three sons anyway. So that might, and I'll...
Well, they live here, I think, somewhere
Mm-hmm.
out in Rogers Park, I think,
mm-hmm.
the Bachners that are here.
Yeah, there she still has a son here, and specifically she mentioned. So that must be the one that's married to your niece.
Well, not exactly to my niece.
Well, she would be your sister's daughter?
Well, no, she married Betty Derringer's brother, Roy, and he was killed in a plane accident, my Betty. But the Bachners are some relation to the Derringers. That's how it is. I don't really know.
I see. That's one of those
Yeah.
Shoestring.
I don't know them, don't keep up with them.
Yeah.
The Buckners here went to the Philippines for a trip last fall, I know.
Oh, I see.
And my Betty called and asked me if I'd go and stay in their house, but I didn't. Well, well they went, they didn't like to leave it.
Mm-hmm. But that's, well, anyway, Alaska's a small country. It's
well,
a small world in its own way.
Yes.
Well, you moved to Cordova then in 1914, 15?
18, I think it was.
18.
Or 1916, my mother. 16 or 17, yeah.
I see. So you were a young woman, a young lady.
I was 15,
mm-hmm.
Yes. Or 15 or 14, I think, that fall, to go to school. I went ahead of my mother and family. Then they moved over in 1917. Yes, that's how it was.
I see.
I was staying with some other people. The judge from in Cordova, he's Judge Adams and his wife. And I lived with them to go to school.
Well, that was nice. And so you were kind of, you were familiar with the court, problems of the court, too.
Yeah, he's the one who, well, he was an engineer, you know. He'd, what do you call it? Would they lay out a city or town?
A surveyor.
A surveyor, yes. Is what he was.
Oh, I see.
The judge, then finally was the judge there.
I see.
He was also here in Anchorage before that.
Mm-hmm.
And helped plan this place.
How interesting.
But Anchorage is not a very old city, really, for Alaska, you know.
No, that's true.
Or for any place.
No, like 1914, 15?
Well, yes, they started then, really, but not too much either at that time. I came here on a from Catella, it was a funny way to come too, on a gas boat that was bringing a load of oil here. In 1915 it was, or 1916, and it was a tent city at that time. And I was just, I was 14 and I was going to go to Valdez to have my, get eyeglasses, but you know, no way to get out, no more boats going in Catella, so everything was done a rough, odd way, long ways, you know. From Catella, it was too to come out.
Well, you know, that's the thing. When you don't have, and I think this is something we lose sight of, that when you don't have an airline schedule to go by,
yes,
and you have to go someplace, you hitch a ride the best way you can, whether it's dog team or
they can do it now. Yes,
a barge. That was a.
There was no airplane.
No. And how did you come to Anchorage on a gas?
Yes, it was a big gas boat called the Waif, an old boat called the Waif. And well, you maybe have heard of Billy the Kid. He was a real, quite a famous old Alaskan pilot. I mean a captain, you know. See,
skipper.
Ever since he was 14 years old, yes.
No, I haven't heard of him.
There should be more written up about him, really.
Gee, I wonder if there's anything on him anywhere.
I don't know, because I saw in the Seattle paper a couple of years ago something about him there. And it said there wasn't enough written up about him, because he was a very daring man. He took boats across any kind of water. He was from Chile. He was Spanish, I guess it is, isn't it?
Yes, yes. Chilean.
And so, he talked so rapid and so fast when they get into rough water, I can remember him. Just talking so fast, I don't see how his men understood him.
But he was the skipper on the Waif.
On the Waif. And he brought the load of gas, it was, into here. They had a big barge they towed. And anchored out there in the mud flats, you know. I never got off. I just was standing there looking while they unloaded the whole thing. And then went back Valdez way and let me off there. So
I see, because you came directly here.
Yes.
You didn't stop at Valdez on the way.
No, and I was the only, there was just men on that boat, but he let me come along, you know. He said,
yes, I've been the only woman on the boat.
Yes. And it was such a rough, it was terrible weather. About this time in October. And rough and sick I was, and hoping the boat would sink.
Oh!
It was so bad. I thought, I could never live through it.
Oh, it could be rough in the fall.
Oh, and he wouldn't let you up. I had to stay downstairs when it was rough. I'd go overboard, he said.
Oh,
and down in that hatch, you'd smell all that bilge and stuff. And that was the worst. I took a lot of those kind of trips, so I always wanted to go places, so they mostly were like that.
That's the way you got around.
Yeah, it's the only way you got around.
Gee. I've been on some fishing boats.
Yes, I like them either very much.
I was on one one time that, I won't tell, that's not, I'm not being interviewed, but that's a story I should tell for the tape. I should interview myself for these
You
tapes.
Should.
Because I've done a lot of these same things.
Yes, you have.
Really, it isn't of your generation. My experiences are in the 50s and 60s, you know, but when you're on an old fishing boat that blows up, when the engine goes out in the middle of a big storm offshore from Kodiak, I don't care what decade or generation you're in, you know, it's still an adventure.
It still is. It really is. But getting back to Billy Crooker, his name was, this Billy the Kid. His name was Billy the Kid, you see.
Uh-huh. Like Crooker was his name.
Crooker, C-R-O-O-K-E-R, Crooker.
From Chile.
Yes, but the only person I know that could tell you quite a bit about him is Otto Koppen, down in Cordova.
I see.
Because Otto is around 90, but I think his memory is real good.
Is that so?
I saw him last year, and it was. I go down there, I have brothers there.
Yes.
And my brother, Pierre, knew him. We all knew him real well, and I guess he could tell you quite a bit about him, too.
And your brother's name is Pierre Deville.
Pierre Deville, and Jack Deville is the other one. But Pierre is 6 years younger than I am.
Mm-hmm. I should meet them when
yes,
I go over
you
there.
Should.
I must go over there. Oh, yes, and I'll look this man up.
Otto Koppen.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's anyone else that... He lived in Cordova, too, so there could be other people. The Davises have a store, Davis's Store it's called. And I think those men remember him. Could tell you quite a bit maybe about him, too.
Well, I'll
in the
that.
Store.
I'll go over
yes.
there and talk to those people. But your father passed away in Catala.
In 1911, yes.
Uh-huh. And with this emphysema problem, but he was still running the sawmill at that time.
Yes, everything was still...
I mean, he was in the town, the people were moving out of the town.
Yes, they were moving out, but everything was still there, of course, and in good shape yet, too.
But disaster was imminent. It was a terrible heartbreak to him.
It was, because they were going fast. They're getting over to Cordova and locating themselves, you know.
I see. The Guggenheims just announced that they were going to change their location, or what happened?
Well, they decided it would be a better harbor. There was a good harbor there in Cordova. Yes. You see, they had a very good harbor. And easier to take the ore out. It was for the copper, Kennecott Copper Corporation, you know.
Was it you who told me you lived on Woody Island?
No, I didn't.
No, it was somebody else.
That's in Kodiak.
I know that's in Kodiak.
I've been there, but
yeah.
Lived in Kodiak.
I was thinking of the earthquake, and I was thinking of what it did to Kodiak. The land came up so that the docks were 6 feet above the...
That's what Billy said. I haven't been there since the earthquake,
60,
but we did live there.
Yeah.
After.
I was over there 64, 65. I was over there that summer, that very summer. They
yes.
were using a makeshift operation. I was thinking how it had changed the town then. And the look of the town, you know, there was a lot of devastation.
Yes.
Of the earthquake.
Well, all over in Cordova. We were here. I was here in
yes.
Anchorage. But I've been down to Cordova, and my son, Bill, flew some man that was studying it, two men in his plane, over Catala. They wanted to see what it had done to that place.
Yes.
And it had raised everything there, too, because there's, he's part Indian, Jim Hodna, there, and he went, too. He said, Bill, do you want to come? And he said, I went right along to see what he could see, because he was from Catala, too. I've always known him. And he said, it raised it so much. Well, it was the year before, that fall, before my father died, the Portland was wrecked in Catala, that boat. And it was just before Thanksgiving. And was loads of turkeys and all the stuff that was coming up for Thanksgiving, you know. People was rescuing them on the beach. And my little sisters and I, we were out there and we got one.
Got one of
and
the
had one of the turkeys for Thanksgiving. But the boat just split lengthwise, you know, and was thrown up one half of that old Portland behind our house.
Well, now what caused that?
It went on a reef of rocks. There's a big reef there of rocks.
I see.
And... the people, no one got drowned. They got them all ashore, but all this other stuff. And this boat, gradually, we used to play on that side, was up there, a big, long side of a boat, you know. And it gradually got covered over with sand, and you couldn't see it anymore. But this Jim Hodna told me that, after the earthquake, that thing was way up in the air again, just like when it was first thrown there. So it was thrown up high too, Cotella over
yes.
there, though.
Yes.
Is, you remember that old boat, Portland, where you used to play? Well, that's way up high now again like that. That was funny.
What did you do for play besides playing on the
those kind of things?
Yeah.
Just old-fashioned games, I guess, you know.
But 35,000 people. Now, your mother had, what did your mother do? She nursed.
Yes, but when we were small, she didn't. She just stayed home, you know,
mm-hmm.
and took care of us
mm-hmm.
until after my father died. Then she had to. She had quite a time making a living for us, too.
What did she do after your father died? Then in Cotella?
Well, the store was still there, and she tried to run it, but people were leaving so fast. And she baked bread and sold it. And I learned to bake bread, too, when I was 10, and I did, too, with her. And different bakery things, you know.
Mm-hmm. And then you went on, when you went on to school over in Cordova, did you work at all at I realized you were going to school, but...
Well,
it was a difficult period.
When I was 15 and 16, I worked in the bakery in the summer
uh-huh.
down there.
And where did you meet Mr. Smith?
He was up here in the surface. He
oh,
came
was
up.
He?
Yeah.
I see.
The First World War, you know.
Yes.
He was a sergeant. And
here in Anchorage?
In Cordova.
In
yes.
Cordova. Was there a military base in Cordova?
Yeah. And there was Fort Liscombe in Valdez, you see. There was it was right out of Valdez. It's called Liscombe now, but it was Fort Liscombe.
Yes.
And he was based there and down at Seward, both, and Cordova. They all had little, I know, 500 or 600 men
yes,
in.
Yes, barracks, sort of.
Yes.
I see. So he came to Valdez, to Fort Liscombe, or to Cordova first?
He came to Cordova first.
And you met him there?
Yeah, 1918.
And...
He was real young, so was I, but we got married then, you know.
And then he remained in Cordova?
Yes, as long as there was a railroad there. The
He went to work for the Cordova
after railroad? He got out of service, yes.
I see, for the Guggenheims.
Yeah.
For the Kennecott
yes,
Copper
Company. Yes, it was. Mm-hmm.
What did they call the railroad?
The Copper River Northwestern Railway Road.
I see. And what did he do for them?
Well, he learned the train, engineer, fireman, and then engineer. And he worked here, too, as on this railroad, when it closed over there, you know.
I see. When was that it closed? What was it?
For? In 1938.
1938 it was. I see. So then did you come over here at that time?
No, we went to Kodiak.
Well, you did.
Yes. Kodiak was just starting up. Of course, there was a Kodiak, a little Kodiak mm-hmm. town, but the military was going in there then, and my husband had a machine and our plumbing shop and store there.
I see. In the town of Kodiak?
Yes, right in Kodiak. We were there 4 years.
I see. Until that was World War II by that time.
Oh, yeah. We went into war the year after we got there in 41, you know.
Yes.
Well, that fall, wasn't it? Yes, in 41. Pearl Harbor.
Well, now, in the meantime, through the 30s and before, your children were born. And you had five.
They were all born in Cordova.
Oh, I see.
No, Billy was born in Latouche. I'd forgotten. Now, that's a long time ago. After he got out of the service, he went there at Latouche. Now, that's gone, too, that mining town.
No, Latouche. That was a mining town.
Yes.
And where was this? Near Juneau?
No, it was this side of the Gulf. And it took about 8 hours to get there on the boat from Cordova, I guess.
I see. On the Prince William Sound side.
Yes.
I see.
I don't know if there's anything there. It was a copper town too.
It was.
It was a busy little place at that time, you know. And we lived there a year. That's where we had Billy, our first baby. And then went back to Cordova.
A few hundred people there?
Yes, there was quite a busy place.
Now that would have been built after the false fronts of the buildings. I was trying to think, you know, so
yes.
many of these towns that are abandoned, they still have the false fronts to the stores.
Yes, they all had. Of course, Cordova's have burnt down.
Yes. But Latouche would have been the same.
Oh, it was the same. Well, the mine, they had script, or whatever they call it, too. That's what you used.
Oh, Oh, really?
There was the Lady Smith mine, and I don't know the name of the other one. There was two mines there. Mm-hmm. A little boardwalk high up that you walk to town on.
Did people live out at the mine, at the mine site, and then walk into town?
Well, there was camps for men there, and there wasn't so very many women. But there was a circle of houses where the women lived. They were all white people, too. There was no natives there, I don't believe. I don't remember. No, there weren't.
And that was a good one named Copper? Or was that somebody else?
No, that wasn't. And I've forgotten what it was.
Somebody else developed copper in that period.
Yes, they did. And why they abandoned that, I don't know either. But they did. There was a cannery there, too. On the dock. I remember seeing the cannery. But we only lived there a year, and I never went around very much at the place, kind of wild place, mm-hmm. you know.
That's a wild country.
It was wild country. And I wanted always to go picking flowers up in the back. The summer we was there, and my husband didn't let me, so there was bears in there. And I guess maybe there was, you know.
Yes. My former husband camped on Lituya Bay and pulled out of there. He was doing some mining exploration work over there. Made me think of the bears walked up and down the beach.
Yes.
But he pulled out of there. Just remember when that big wall, they had a little bitty earthquake, and the big wall of rock fell into Lituya Bay?
Yes.
And it generated a tidal wave. And he left there just days before that happened. He was camped right on the beach. Boy, they'd have been goners.
Yes.
But he spoke of the wild celery and the bears and the. I didn't go with him on that trip, and man, I'm just as glad.
And yes. Well, lots of earthquakes in Alaska, little ones, but no one around was afraid of them at that time.
Until
we got this one, really, this big one.
Yeah, that shook us all up as much. Well, I have just a little bit of time to finish up. I'd like to have you tell me kind of what happened to your various offspring. Your youngest son, Bill. Is he your youngest?
No, he's my oldest
Bill
child.
Is your oldest.
Yes.
And he's the one flying in Dillingham.
Yes, and he has a store. He has a little store up there, but he flies too.
Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Now, have you visited him over there right now?
Well, I was there 2 years ago. He comes down, but I don't go up very much. You know, I don't do much flying anymore. I will go in any place, I mean.
Mm-hmm. You're not buzzing around an awful lot.
No. I'd like to, but it's I'm kind of my leg. You know, it's so bad. It's hard for me to get around.
Yes. But, all right, now you're younger then. Where are your other?
Well, Joe lives in Juneau, and he has a totem supply store.
Oh.
It's for fishermen, but he was with the ACS.
Mm-hmm.
He joined when he was 16 and was over in Germany and married a German girl, but he has 4 children. His boy, oldest son, graduated Fairbanks this spring. No, one of his boys, that's not his oldest, his youngest.
Yes.
There's quite a few of ours that have gone up there to go to school, you know.
Yes.
And then the two daughters live here, and Tim in Fairbanks, my youngest son. He's with the railroad. He's an engineer on the railroad.
Is that so?
He's out at, they live in, isn't that ridiculous? Island Homes in there.
Yes, yes, yes.
The Slater Drive, is it?
Yes,
yes. Slater Drive, 221.
If I meet him, I'll tell him how much I've enjoyed visiting him.
Yeah, just call them up. His name is Tim Smith.
Mm-hmm.
I think they call him John. It's John, mm-hmm. Timothy John, you know, but we always call him Tim. And Margot's an awfully nice little girl, too, that he married.
I'll give him a call when I get there.
Yeah, I wish you would.
Well, you've had a really fascinating experiences in the country. I'd love to chat with you a little more about your seagoing adventures. You no doubt had many, many interesting trips.
Back and forth from Cotella to Cordova and Valdez, you know,
mm-hmm.
on these small boats.
And the big storms that do come along, of course.
Oh, yes. They always seem to. It's stormy country down there. Off that, over that Copper River, you know. It's really quite stormy and rough.
The men that know the water There, I suppose there are special skills.
Oh, there are. They have to be in that kind of water. Just anybody couldn't take a boat through that.
Did you ever stand on the bridge and watch the bow of the ship go into those big waves?
If we got to, but like I said, it was mostly on Billy Crooker's boats, Billy the Kid's boats. He had the Corsair and he had the Waif, the different boats. Well, the Waif wrecked. It went up on the rocks, too. But nobody was on it at the time.
What happened to him eventually?
Well, he left there, and he died, I think, in Seattle a few years ago.
I see. Were there other men that were known as skippering men that you could think of in particular that were?
Well, Ben Durkee was also, had a, you know, he had this little launch, they called it. It was a big gas boat that went out to meet the steamers and bring in the freight and things like that.
Yes, they had to lighter the freight in Cotella.
Yes, they did. And had to bring it all in on the barges. And he was a real good boatman, too. They really had to be, you know.
Yes. Where had he, do you know where he had come from at all?
No, he was already there when we got there.
I see.
He has a son that's living in Juneau. Yes, he's younger than I am because he had a lot of children, but I know I was by another wife, and his name is also Ben Durkee, so it'd be easy enough to find
easy
him.
To find him, yes. Well, I must go on and to Cordova, and
yes.
You've given me a lot of information.